Hey guys, my name is Amy Coonan, and I am a millennial on a mission to eat, clean, cook, dress, and live more sustainably. It's because of that that I'm also the host of The Town Hall, Rubicon's first and only podcast where we share sustainability stories from the industry's influencers and the biggest brands. Jam-packed with tips, tricks, and need-to-know info for those that want to do better for the planet but may not know where to start. We are covering it all. Last year, we spoke to some incredible people who are doing some incredible things for our planet. The executive director of the Leonardo DiCaprio Foundation, the CEO of Seven Generation Cleaning Products, and one of the brains behind environmental sustainability in the NBA. This season, we're kicking it up a notch. Don't forget to download and subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, or iHeartRadio so that you don't miss a minute. And if you can't catch us on your commute or you don't download directly, don't stress. You can check out our website at rubicon.com/townhallpodcast for recaps, reviews, and all things Town Hall. Hey, everyone, and welcome to another episode of The Town Hall. Today, my guest is a fan favorite. And when I say fan, I mean my husband, my daughter, and myself, who are Seven Sunday Cereal super fans. I am so excited to be joined by fellow B Corp Seven Sundays founder, Hannah Barnstable. Hannah, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to talk.
So let's jump right into it. How did you find yourself the founder of Muesli, right? That's how you pronounce it?
That's right. You got it.
Okay. How did you find yourself the founder of a Muesli company? Walk me through your background a bit.
Sure. So just like a lot of people who find themselves living out a passion or starting a business, it started as a personal desire. My husband and I went to New Zealand on our honeymoon. At the time, we both had just regular, normal jobs. We were living in New York City, and we spent some time backpacking through the beautiful country of New Zealand. And every morning we had muesli for breakfast. That was what was served at the little bed and breakfast that we stayed in. And they were these gorgeous bowls. I had never had anything like it, where you could see, you know, chunks of Brazil nuts and cinnamon and chia seeds. And it was just, you know, I grew up in the 80s, so I didn't know cereal like that. I knew cereal as, you know, colorful O's and sugar bombs and all that kind of stuff. So I really just fell in love with this muesli style cereal. And when we came back, and, you know, I can go on and on about the other ways that that culture influenced us just as far as sustainability, but really just focused on the product, because that's really what kind of, what triggered the jump out of a regular day job into starting a business. You know, we came back, I scoured all the grocery stores around New York City for a muesli. They were all like these bottom shelf boxes that looked like they were 10 years old and dusty and not remotely the same. And I had a vision to just clean up that aisle. It was like food seemed like it was starting to change for the better in snacks, you know, dairy and dairy alternatives, like all these different cool things were going on. But every time I walked down the cereal aisle, it was just kind of looked exactly the same as it did when I was a kid. And I wanted to bring something, this new cereal that I had discovered, to the U.S. market. And I'm a passionate foodie. I love food. And I am a huge believer that, you know, we can't change the way that we shouldn't change the way that food was intended to be, the way that it was originally grown. And so all these passions sort of came together into starting Seven Sundays.
Let's talk about passion for a little bit. Where do you think sparked your passion for environmental sustainability? Was it something in your childhood? Where do you think that you were able to find a way to do better for the environment?
You know, I think it was coming from a couple directions. My prior career path was in investment banking. I was in finance, but I worked with a lot of food companies. So I found myself, you know, in a lot of food plants, and I am generally a curious person. And so I was just, you know, very interested in, okay, this is, you know, I buy salsa, right? A jar of salsa, like, how does it come to be? And I learned all those things on the job. And to be honest, it was confusing to me. It felt like there was too much human involvement and science involvement in something like food should be much more natural. And so I think from my perspective, the sustainability stuff really ties into the nutrition. I do believe that the way things are grown and where they're grown and how they're processed really impacts nutrition as well as the environment. It's kind of that perfect harmony idea. So that's where my passion comes in, is just this firm belief in, you know, I kind of saw how things were happening in the food world. And I, you know, it was more than muesli for me. It was, I would like to see if we can rebuild the food system in this little business from the ground up and really do things differently. I will say that a big part of sort of the agriculture sustainability side comes from Brady, my partner who joined the company, partner in business and also in life. He joined in year two or three as kind of heading up operations. And he came from an environmental science background. And so my sort of passion for just leaving things be and that harmony of health and sustainability. But then he came in with a real agriculture background, sustainability background. And he's the one who's really driving, you know, regenerative agriculture practices and programs with our farmer partners and looking at how our ingredients are grown and the impacts there. So together we both bring that passion in. I'd say mine is really more on the end product and the food side, and his is more on the soil, like all the way back. And so we're coming at it from two places.
I think that's really cool. I cannot imagine working with my husband. That is, you are my hero. I'm just thinking about the last, you know, 18 plus months we've been home, and I'm like, that's a lot. So we talked about, you know, a little bit about the building of the business, but I'm so curious because it's such a like cute name. Tell me about the company name. How'd it come to be?
Yeah. So Seven Sundays really comes from the idea of, you know, in the US in particular, what I was seeing and part of why I started the company was this sort of, you know, disconnect from food, particularly in the morning. So, you know, we all learned at an early age, breakfast is the most important meal of the day. But if you really took a look at what people were eating or doing in their routines in the morning, it didn't look like we were setting ourselves up for success, right? If you walk the breakfast aisle, do you think this is setting us up for success for the day? And so I felt that the one day where people did maybe eat more intentionally and really live more intentionally, you know, just talking with friends. And it was Sunday. Sunday was your planning day. Sunday was the day that you maybe took that extra time to enjoy a meal instead of racing through it. And so when we, you know, when the idea was sparked to sort of just create a different sort of breakfast product, I wanted there to be that experience element, that intentional element that we feel on Sundays, a lot of us, but carried throughout the week. So that's where the seven Sundays, treat every morning the way in that intention as you do on a Sunday. So in the US, you know, we rush through life differently than maybe if you were to visit Europe or New Zealand or elsewhere where, you know, there is a proper mealtime in the morning. So it was kind of bringing that idea into the breakfast aisle.
I love that. And I did want to, you know, bring up the breakfast aisle. So I stumbled across your product, specifically the grain-free line of products, when I got diagnosed with celiac disease in October of 2019. I was sick for like 3 months. We didn't know what was wrong. I had a bunch of tests, a bunch of doctors, found out I had celiac. So, you know, when you were talking about intentional eating and becoming, you know, more aware of what we're putting in our bodies, that, you know, really resonated with me because I did want a healthier option than just, you know, the two like brand name gluten-free cereals that I like are Lucky Charms and Honey Nut Cheerios. And I don't want to eat those every day or have my daughter eat those every day. What can you tell our listeners about muesli? I mean, what are the benefits of eating it?
Oh gosh. Okay. So yeah, I mean, we now have expanded our line beyond muesli, but I will tell you, I mean, muesli will always be at our core. And essentially, you know, while a lot of people are less familiar with muesli and, you know, even starting our conversation, it's hard to pronounce. It is the most popular cereal globally. Like we sort of in the US started from a different place when we launched into cereal and it was sort of this extruded puff product. But muesli is a pretty classic breakfast around the world. And I think that, you know, It's very different, right? So it is typically raw grains, nuts, seeds, fruits, spices, wild blueberries. There's a lot of, you know, exotic, interesting textures and flavors in it. And, you know, the key benefits to it are, first of all, taste. I think, again, that was my initial draw to it. Yeah, I was into health, but I mostly just loved the taste. I loved having chewy oats and crunchy nuts and seeds and, like, you know, sweet fruits and different spices. I loved the experience of eating it and its versatility. So you could make it hot if it was a cold morning if you wanted, or my favorite way is just to pour cold milk on it. But to your point, I mean, the health benefits, I've always said this, I truly think muesli is one of the healthiest things you can eat. So it not only tastes good, it not only curbs every and all craving chocolate. And it's like, I can do a small bowl of that instead of dessert any night of the week. And it really does, you know, fill you up. It doesn't leave you craving more. So we are sensitive to a lot of different food. Well, we're cognizant of different food sensitivities. So obviously, you know, everything we make is gluten-free. We have completely grain-free options as well, which have really taken off in the last couple of years. And then probably the biggest benefit, aside from it just tasting good and making you feel good, it's high in plant-based protein and fiber, so it sticks with you. And so again, you know, there's nothing that will curb a craving like a small bowl of muesli where you can just feel really good. We do not use natural flavors. We just wrote a long blog on our reasoning as to why. But I'd say perhaps the number one ingredient on packaged food, or up there, probably a top five, is natural flavors. And they basically work to sort of trick your taste buds. They're not a whole lot better for you than artificial flavors. And they're in almost everything, and they sort of trick your taste buds. And so what's the beauty of a muesli is it's so pure, it's so unprocessed that you don't, you know, you're training your body to appreciate those natural tastes. And especially for kids, our 9-year-old is our oldest. We also have a 6-year-old and a 3-year-old. And they're our best, you know, taste testers because of their age, right? They're going to be honest and they're super picky. And they always come back to their muesli. It's easy for them to eat. It makes them feel good. And so I think you need all of that in a healthy food product, Amy. And I can't imagine having celiac. No one in our family does, but we do have some sensitivities to gluten, and I know how hard it is to find unprocessed good stuff, you know, and you can't always make things from scratch, right? We just don't have the time for that, especially with your 11-month-old. So yeah, I think we don't hone in on one trend. We try to make foods that everyone can eat and that everyone can love and incorporate into a daily routine. And again, I'd say the vast majority of our time is really spent on finding the highest quality ingredients.
So, I mean, my favorite flavor is the blueberry and turmeric, I think, right? That's one. And it says on the top of the bag, recipe by Hannah, which is like very cool because I'm talking to Hannah right now. How do you come up with the flavor combinations? What does the experimentation process look like? How do you know what's going to taste good together?
Yeah. So again, I am a foodie through and through, although I don't have a formal background. So I always put that out there. But, you know, I spend a good chunk of my day in the kitchen or in a grocery store, and those are my happy places. So I'm constantly in food. I'm constantly creating things. And, you know, it's just always been fun for me and a release for me with 3 kids. And like you said, working with your husband and everything else is kind of my time. So I do love food, and I come from a family of people who just love food. And my brother works for the company, Andy, and he actually, it should say recipe by Hannah and Andy. I should give him some credit. Because he's my true sort of hero in the kitchen. But yeah, I mean, other than that, we do look at trends that are out there. They always start from within, though. We always kind of brainstorm and talk through flavor profiles, things that would pair well together. So blueberries, turmeric, cashews, turmeric, you want a little pinch of cinnamon in there. You know, we kind of have that sort of innately in our, I guess, in our toolkit, because we do like food and we make a lot of stuff. And then, of course, we look to trends and we look at what's selling, and we even go as far as to talk. Like, we go real, you know, I'll walk into a grocery store, my local co-op, and I'll pull the person who's stocking, you know, the cereal aisle, and I'll say, what are things that people are drawn to right now? Like, what do you see really moving? And so we'll go all the way into sort of that real time, sort of, you know, really on the ground, like what are people buying? So it's a combination of stuff. And then I can't leave out the fact that we do still focus on sustainability pretty heavily. So I have Brady chirping in my ear, like, we've got to grow more buckwheat. These farmers love buckwheat. It is incredible for the soil. They can get two crop rotations in. I was just down in, you know, Welcome, Minnesota, and this is what I'm seeing. And so we do incorporate into our development, you know, ingredients that have a benefit to soil health. I mean, our newest line that we launched, our sunflower cereal, is exactly that. It was, you know, we know that there was a food stream, there was a food waste with this high protein sunflower meal. If you think about it, like, there's sunflower fields growing around the Midwest, they have super deep roots, they're great for the soil. But basically the output is a sunflower seed or sunflower oil, and sunflower oil has taken off. So when people do make sunflower oil, there's this high protein, high fiber meal left over. And so we are the first cereal to come out, and we worked with the processor, you know, various people around Minnesota to develop a cereal made with that meal so that we're able to kind of remove that from the waste stream, but also, you know, increase the demand for the sunflower meal. So we do things like that too. So yes, recipe by Hannah for sure. Yes, my kids are the first people to try everything, because I really think that if they like it at their ages, we're onto something, and then we can kind of expand from there. But of course, I have, you know, the element coming in from Brady, which is, here's what these farmers need to grow, and how can we incorporate more of these types of things into the foods that we're making?
I love that. I mean, God, you work with your husband, your brother, like, I cannot imagine. Everyone on this season of the town hall recording in 2021 is being asked this question. And it's fascinating because everybody has a different answer, but there are also a lot of similarities. Let's talk about the pandemic. How did Seven Sundays pivot? And how do you think the issue of food waste, like we were talking about upcycling ingredients, has changed during the pandemic? Have there been some major impacts along your supply chain?
Yeah, I can imagine everybody has a different response to this, because it specifically hit people in different ways, right? In different industries. And it's almost hard to wrap your head around all that. You know, during the pandemic, especially at the start of it, because we were a shelf stable, kind of nutrient dense food item, and we happened to do a lot of business with Costco, and they benefited largely during the pandemic. We, you know, while our lives sort of shut down, is, you know, as you know, with kids being home, with travel coming to a halt, our personal lives shut down, but our business kept going, and it kept selling because of the types of products and the types of retailers that we were in. So we got a nice lift from that, and we created some new awareness. And I think just everybody kind of took a look at what they were eating and their health and that kind of thing. Now I think we're in a zone, you know, more than 12 months later of, gosh, consumer habits shifted. Like, the way that you grocery shop, I'd guess, is maybe a little bit different, or most of us, than how it was pre-pandemic. So I would say, you know, the trends that we're seeing in cereal are kind of back to pre-pandemic. So there was a brief period of time where our more premium products, like our grain-free paleo SKUs, had taken a backseat to, like, our more value-oriented, cheaper products, right? Like the grain-based products that are, just because of the ingredients, a lower price point. So that happened for a bit. But I would say at this point, I can pretty confidently say, like, the trends from pre-pandemic where people are willing to pay up for food and stuff, like, that's all come flooding back. But the places that people are buying it and the way that we promote our product or create awareness are different. And we have had to adjust to that. We put a lot more effort into our website and subscriptions and things like that, where people can have food delivered. We work with Instacart on, you know, creating awareness of our products. We do more digital ads. Amazon, you know, people always ask, like, oh, you work with Amazon, should I really buy your product there? Yeah, I mean, Amazon's a great platform for small businesses like ours, because it allows us to launch and be visible to a lot of different people. So we've put some more resources toward that. So those channels are all really, really growing for us. And then sort of traditional retail, I think it's, you know, back to where it was, but it feels like there's more consumer emphasis on still getting groceries in new ways. through different platforms.
When you guys became B Corp certified in 2019, and you know, I did see this on your beautiful website, what was that like? Because it's a huge accomplishment in and of itself, but you know, correct me if I'm wrong, weren't you guys the first certified B Corp in Minnesota?
The first food company to become B Corp certified, yes.
So what does your B Corp certification mean to you?
So yes, it is a process. I take that certification a lot more seriously now, having been through the process, right? Because you're like, wow, I know what goes into that.
That's nuts.
It's about 6 months of work and back and forth and, you know, for them to understand our business. And there's a lot of certifications in food, as you know. And hands down, this one was, you know, what I would call really deep, really comprehensive. And it was not about the money. And some are. So I would say that it was very natural for us to go this route. And in fact, the vast majority of what the B Corp signifies, we were already doing, as I think is the case with most companies who are getting that certification. But we were growing from like, you know, Hannah and Brady in Minnesota and kind of a regional business to more national. And, you know, our founder story doesn't really stretch as far. So we needed a really quick way to make it clear what we stand for and that we are a mission-based company, which we've been in business 10 years and there's nothing more clear than the fact that we are a mission-based company. When the way that we make decisions, it profit is far, far down the line. And instead we're, you know, we're much more focused on how we can rebuild a better food system and what that looks like and how we treat our employees, all that stuff. So it was natural and we went after it because we wanted to, you know, a way to very quickly and confidently show people who are new to our brand, you know, what we stand for. And, but really, Amy, it was like, it's kind of it was an extension of what we were already doing. The other piece of it that's great is it formalizes it. So I don't know if you're familiar with this, but when you go through the B Corp process, you actually change your operating documents, like your legal formation of your business. And so, you know, we had worked with a lawyer. And so what that means is the B Corp is bigger than me and Brady. Before, it was Brady and I saying, here's the things that we want to stand for. Here's, you know, how we're going to operate the business. But now that it's in our operating docs, that extends beyond Brady and I. Not that we anticipate exiting the business anytime soon, but if we did, or if more voices came into our business, that would stick. Like that mission-based path that we're on. And you know, the other, again, amazing thing about the B Corp is you have to show improvement. So we're always thinking about it. It's not like, ah, we checked the box, we're done. It's like, okay, we're launching a new package. How can we make our packaging more sustainable? And we go through a whole process. So we're always thinking about improvements. And so now that platform or that plan is in place for us, it just kind of sets us up to continue down this path and ensure that we stay down the path. And that's probably the biggest benefit of it.
Okay, Hannah, before I let you get back to supplying all of us with, you know, the most important meal of the day, I did want to play our quick rapid fire game with you. I'm going to ask you 10 questions and you just fire off the first thing that comes to mind. You ready?
Okay.
It's not bad. Number one, what does your morning routine look like?
Wake up very, very early before anyone else. Have really strong coffee and organize my day. That's my me time. I am an early bird.
Who is the last person that you texted?
My best friend from high school, Tanya, who conveniently lives down the street from me and we get together at least once a week for grilled pizzas or burgers.
Where do you see Seven Sundays in 5 years?
I see us as a cupboard staple. So more and more people are familiar with what we're doing and where we're headed, and we're in more cupboards.
What is one personal lesson you learned over the last 18 plus months during the height of the pandemic?
Less is more. So less doing. And that's really where life sits, right? It's not in running around all the time.
What was the first concert you ever went to?
I believe my parents took me to a Kenny Rogers concert when I was about 3 or 4.
What is your favorite indulgent breakfast food?
Waffles.
This next one is for, I've never done this before. This is for my best friend, Rachel. She lives in Minnesota and she's going to the state fair for the first time at the end of the month. I told her I would ask you whether on the air or off the air. So I slipped it in. Have you ever been to the fair?
Oh, yes.
Okay. What is one can't miss booth or treat or something she has to get at the Minnesota State Fair?
I have to throw out two. I'm going to do three. Fried pickles, the corn on the cob, and the giant slide.
Okay, perfect. She was like, can you please just maybe get her phone number or ask her? I was like, I'll put it on the show.
Wasn't a fair person, but we ended up being a part of the Eco Experience building with Seven Sundays a couple years ago, and we'll do it again this year. And so I had to go almost every day the fair was open, and I was dreading it. And my employees will tell you, they were like, you became a carny. And it's true. I was like, this is amazing. And I embraced it. So I hope she likes it. But we really got to know the fair, and those would be my do not miss things.
What is one piece of advice that you would give to a budding female entrepreneur?
Trust your gut and know that the path that you're taking is uncharted. And just know that's why you hit roadblocks. That's why you may have naysayers. That's called innovation. And stick to it. Trust your gut.
What is one thing you do to relax?
Ooh, read or run.
And lastly, what does success mean to you?
Impact. Impacting people in a positive way.
Hannah, thank you so much for coming on today. I mean, as a fellow mother, you know, as someone who's very closely tied professionally and emotionally to sustainability, and of course, as somebody living with celiac, Seven Sundays checks all the buckets in our house, and I'm just really honored that I got to tell your story.
Oh, thanks. It's so good to get to know you too, and I'm looking forward to staying in touch.